If you're like me, you love and miss that golden era of Christian music. From the Jesus music of the 70s, the monster vocalists of the 80s, and the creativity and risk-taking of the 90s and early 2000s. I'm Andy Christman, and for the past four decades, I was privileged to be smack dab in the middle of this crazy and beautiful thing that we call CCM. As a member of the group For Him, I got to know so many great people with even greater stories, and I don't want to keep these stories to myself. That's why I created One Degree of Andy, so you can join me as I reminisce with my friends and colleagues. My hope is that as you experience these conversations, you'll go back and listen to that golden era of music and fall in love all over again, just like I have. This is the One Degree of Andy podcast. Okay, what you're about to hear is the first of a two-part conversation with my very good friend, Mark Harris. We have known each other for 37 years. I think we got the math wrong at the beginning of the episode, but yeah, 37 years of being touring partners, of being very close friends. Our families are tight, and we just have a lot of fun things to talk about when we get together. We're going to talk about our days in For Him, lots of trivia there, what we're doing now, and yeah, you're going to want to stick around for part two, because is just as good as this one. So get ready for my conversation with my good friend Mark Harris. Before we get to that, again, I want to remind you to consider becoming a premium subscriber. And what do you get as a premium subscriber? You get early access to every episode and some exclusive video content. Just go to my website, andychristman.com, or click on the link in the episode description to sign up. Also, however you're listening to the podcast, will you please leave a review, five stars if you would, because that helps us get into better algorithms of suggested podcasts for people to listen to, and it just grows the audience. Okay, here's my conversation with my buddy, Mark Harris.
I literally had a meeting till 9 o'clock last night because we just basically reset kind of our schedule for recording.
Yeah.
And so it was like, oh yeah, we got this recording coming up, and the recording, you know, it doesn't wait for anyone. It's like, no, you got to get ready. So it was like, and we have pre-production in the next few weeks on it. So it's all awesome. It's all fun, yeah. You know, yeah. But
well, I feel like our podcast has already started here, so I'm not even going to do an intro or a countdown, because it's if people know you, Mark, they know you're one of the busiest guys in worship music. And you know, you and I have been, I would say, I was thinking about this before we got going, you have been probably my longest continual friend. And what I mean by that is, yeah, I've got friends from high school and college, yeah, but you lose touch with people over the years. But you and sure, I have been friends since 1987 and have been together and stayed, yeah, in relationship, you know, for, yeah, what is that? 26, 36?
Is that right? What is that? Years. Yeah, it's, yeah, a long, 30? No, I think it's right.
Yeah,
36 years. If you add it all up, yeah, yeah. It's been amazing. And the thing is, just kind of considering just the fact that we've been, I think it's longer than that, but
yeah,
but, and it's just the reality that when you end up each other at such a young age and you're both doing the same thing, and then the thing is then we married best friends, like,
yeah,
Jody and Jackie, part of the equation. It's like, it's kind of, we're stuck with one another. We don't have a choice. So,
and that was, you know what? And let's be honest, back at the beginning, that was kind of the thing, because, you know, you and I were, we sang together, but we weren't super close. You were actually closer with Marty back in those days.
Well, I think so. Cause Marty, yeah. Well, and it's funny because, I agree. And it's really, it's like Marty and I spent more time together in truth.
Yeah.
And then, because we both are goofy, so the humor probably connected us, because we were pretty much trying to out humor one another. So if he would make people laugh, I would try to make them laugh as well.
Yeah.
If I made someone laugh, Marty wanted to, and we kind of were a little bit of an Oliver and Hardy combo, you know.
Yeah.
And anyway, in truth, just because, and when you're traveling as much as we did in truth, you just kind of need to have some kind of comic relief.
Yeah.
So Marty and I were comic relief.
You were, yeah, you fit well together. But you and I were, you know, I wouldn't say we were from different sides of the track. We were from different sides of life. I was, you know, I'm 4 years younger than you. I didn't have my, you and Marty both had your college music degrees.
You
kind of cut from the same cloth in that way. Here I was, this kid coming from Oklahoma, wearing boots and jeans and t-shirts, and you guys were in loafers and buttoned down. You know, it was just different. So, you know, it wasn't until, though, you and I and Jackie and Jody became a foursome, basically, in those late years of Truth, that we were kind of forced together because, you know, just because of those relationships. And I think that that's when you and I really became friends. We got to know each other on a different level than just being in the same group together. And then that just, you know, of course, with For Him and, you know, our lives intertwined so much, having kids around the same time. And, you know, that was, that's basically, and then, you know, through the years, you know, I don't know. I think you and I have been probably a little bit closer than the other guys, not to say that they're not brothers as well. But
sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think you're right. And I think the thing is, you know, Marty and I, we both were from very similar church backgrounds. We went to two universities, and at the time they were colleges, and then they became universities later on, but separate cities, but very similar, even in the fact that they were both from more of a spirit-filled Pentecostal kind of a culture. And then you growing up in Waco in a Baptist church, and then going to OSU. And I mean, Marty and I had all of that. We had so much that we'd grown up in that was so alike that it was all automatic for us to kind of have the same sense of humor towards that. but the thing is, I would definitely say you and I have had so much conversation and friendship through the years that you're one of my longest tenured friends. I look at that and I'm like, you and I don't really ever have to try to catch up.
Right.
When we talk, because we're constantly in contact with one another.
Well, let's be more specific. Our wives are on the phone. So
yeah,
I don't know. You might have been at the office the other day, but I was at home and, I was coming in and out, and I think Jackie and Jody started talking around 10 a.m. And I think I worked in my yard all day that day. I came in at 3 and they were still on the phone. And I'm like, are you still talking to Jody? And she's like giving me kind of that nod going, yeah, that's what they do.
Yeah. It's very true. And the thing is, I love that they have that friendship. It's so rich. And, It's they're more like sisters than they are friends.
Yeah,
they really are.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
They really are. And I think the thing is, it's one of the blessings that we have in just the friendships that are between Jody and Jackie and you and I, is we have grandchildren now that are, you know, they're the biggest part of our life. It's like when we get together, we don't talk about For Him as much, or even about golf or about the ministry that we're doing. We tend to talk about our grandkids.
Yeah,
we tend to kind of go to that conversation.
Mm-hmm, that's right.
And it's because, in reality, you know, there's so much of our life that's really about that right now. So it's like, my guess, and the reason I was thinking that is, I was thinking, I'm sure that Jody and Jackie were mostly talking about grandkid stuff.
Yep, family stuff. And and it's just this time of life where, you know, I think that these relationships, it's one thing I've loved about doing this podcast, is catching up with some of these people that we've known through the years and hearing where they are, but then also sitting down with friends and having these conversations. To me, they're an extra little time capsule of of what we've been through and what's meaningful to us, and some of these stories that, you know, I mean, the For Him podcast that we did have just been, you know, so well received, and people love them, and they want more of them. And so, you know, it's fun having Kirk on, and I'll have Marty on later, but, you know, I've really been looking forward to this, just because I don't know how many stories we'll get to. I don't even know where this conversation is going to go. I don't have a script, you know.
Well, but, you know, I love that you're doing it. I love that you started that, Andy, because it's not, and I'm not saying that specifically for the For Him conversation, but I'm just thinking overall, the one thing that I've heard so many people say is how much they've enjoyed your podcast, because it's like we were a part of Christian music that I would consider it the golden age, because it was just such a special time. And the fact that you're basically having these conversations with all of these people that touched some of that,
it
brings it to life for people that were impacted by it.
And so many of our, we have so many of these crisscross paths, you know, and I'm glad that, you know, I don't want to be morbid here, but we're losing so many people, you know. I wish I would have had this conversation with Carmen. I wish I would have had this conversation with Mylon Lefevre.
Yeah.
You know, it's, you know, we lost Don, and thankfully, you know, I had a conversation with Don last year that had a lot of these things, you know, and a lot of these great stories that we were able to capture and at least be able to look back on years from now and go, oh, it's great to hear his voice telling these stories. And I know, you know,
absolutely.
20, 30 years from now, we'll have these conversations that we can talk about. And anyway, I'm not going to get all sappy and all that kind of stuff, because I know we have a lot of fun stories to talk about, but.
but you're right in what you're saying. It's like, you know, I kind of equate your podcast to a little bit of what Gaither did with the homecoming videos. He started doing those videos with a lot of the artists that were older. And so it's almost like, now, you know, when people go back and they watch those videos and those big groups of people, they're literally looking through going, oh yes, George Younts, you know, Glenn Payne, you know, Vestal Goodman.
Yeah.
And it's like they go through that and they're pointing, go, oh, they're no longer Jake Hess, you know? And it's like you look and you go, there's a history that was documented there that we wouldn't have had had Bill Gaither not chosen to do that. So I do think that what you're putting together, because the great thing about the digital world is that it's there and it's kept, and you can go back and you can see it again and again. And and the fact that you were able to interview Don and talk to Don, I love that, because, you know, Don's no longer with us. And it's like, and I agree with you, it would have been great, you know, to interview Carmen or Mylon, you know.
Mylon was actually scheduled to be on the podcast, and he kept messaging me going, hey, can we back it up a little more, just because, you know, and he wouldn't come right out and say, hey, I'm battling this disease. I'm battling what he was going through. But he would send me a message, just go, brother, sounded like to me, brother.
Oh.
You know, I said, just, you know, be patient with me. I'm going to get with you next month. I want to be on your podcast and love your brother and love the 4M guys. And, you know, and then I get a message from his, you know, from his assistant saying that Mylon has passed. And, you know, it's like, I agree for his family, but also kind of like, oh man, you know, okay, we're off subject here. So, I don't want to, again, we could travel down the, you know, dying road all over the place. But you and I were on the phone, a few weeks ago, and we were on the phone for 90 minutes, I think.
Yeah.
And we were just talking about songs. And I was like, oh, this is the podcast that I think people really want to hear from you is, you know, we could talk about For Him. We could talk about so many other things in our lives. But I think one of the things that obviously is going to be one of your legacy things that you leave behind is your body of work of songs in the 90s and early 2000s, the songs that you wrote for Him that just still are companions for people. You know, down through the years, I'm looking at, you have this same plaque somewhere in your house. I've got it's the KSBJ 25 number one hits, you know? And so I'm looking here going, that's a Mark Harris song, Mark Harris song, Mark Harris song, Mark Harris song. I mean, well, boom, boom, boom. So I'm going, well, Why He Never Changes, When It's Time to Go, Through His Eyes, Basics of Life, Strange Way to Save the World, As Long as My Heart Knows It's You, Real Thing, Future Gen, Nature of Love, Center of the Mark, The Message, Land of Mercy, Measure of Man, Laid on the Line, Before the River Came, Great Awakening, Can't Get Past the Evidence, Who You Are, Surrender, Psalm 112, Fill of the Earth. I mean, come on. And there's more than that. There were more songs that didn't go number one.
Yeah. I need to go take a nap. I need to rest. I need a vacation after.
It's just crazy how when you look back on it, when you're in it, right?
Yeah.
All of us have the same, you know, everybody I talk to, we have the same experience. When you're in it, you're just doing it.
And you
don't take time to stand back and go, wow, what a body of work. Wow, what a thing we've been a part of. No, you're just doing the next thing until
your hand is to the plow. It's like it's like our hand was to the plow until we came off the road finally.
Right.
We never knew a season of, oh, we're just going to, like, when I hear artists talk about, oh, we're going to take 6 months, I'm like, we never took 6 months.
No. We never took a month.
No, we never took a month. And it's like, and I'm like, well, good for you. I'm glad you could take your 6 months. I think it's wise.
Yeah.
But,
oh, yeah. In hindsight, you're like, oh, man, that's pretty healthy.
Yeah. But the thing is, it's like, I think, you know, when we came off the road, I know that we were, because I've had so many people say, and we'll get back to the songs because I love that conversation. But I've had people say, man, it's kind of like you guys just came off the road and you were like done. And I was like, yeah, we were just catching up on rest. We were tired.
It's true.
We're done. We were tired.
Yeah. Well, we had such a machine to feed because not only were there four families that we were providing for, I mean, you know, we had crew and management and booking and, you know, it's not like William Morris needed our money or Mike Atkins needed our money, but they are, it's a part of a big machine that you can't just push pause on and walk away. It breaks down. You just can't do it.
It breaks.
And with that many people, you can't just go out on the road, you know, 50 dates a year. I mean, it's not what we had built. It had to keep rolling until we finally made it stop.
Hey, I think, like, I laugh, just the chuckle was because I was like, now I remember when John Breland booked us and he filled up our schedule for the first year. Like, it was like August of 1990 until August of 91. It was our first year really touring. So, because we began in August.
Right.
And so, and I remember us looking at the schedule, and he had like 260 dates booked. And we were like,
oh, that makes you tired.
Here's the thing. We said, John, what are we going to do with all the dates that aren't booked? Like, you've got 100. Because we came out of Truth, and Truth did concerts a year, and we were like 100 more that we need to be doing.
Yeah.
And I think about that now and I'm like, 260 concerts or events or dates for any artist is basically spread out at least over 3, maybe 4 years.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
So we did 3 years of work in our first year.
But let's talk about for a second how much some of those dates were paying. I mean, some of those I remember some of those contracts were like $500.
Oh,
like $500.
I think we probably, for those, we probably were paying them.
Yeah.
Like we were getting an honorarium, but we probably, it was costing thousands.
Yeah.
So I just remember we were like, oh my goodness. After the first 6 months, we were like, this is going to be okay. This is going to work. And because we didn't know up front, I mean, we were, you know, it's like I saw someone last night, literally, and they were talking to me about ETBU. Mm-hmm. And we went through, there was a guy named Allison that brought us to East Texas Baptist University.
Yep.
And it was when we went to repurpose sound that we had for the first year. And we gave it to their Baptist student. And we literally had our trailer, we said, here, we're going to give, because we're picking up new sound
right
from OAP the next week. And and I forgot about that, and I was like, you know, and the thing that I said to the individual that was talking to me, that was, he was from that era of ETBU. Mm-hmm. I laughed and I said, I'm just curious, when we left it with you? Did it work the next day? Because it was probably worn out.
We beat that stuff up, man.
We beat that stuff up.
Yeah.
And it was like, but the guy said, oh no. He said, you know what? He said, he said, we were in college at the time because it was an older guy. And he said, we were like, wow, this is for him sound equipment. They gave it to us. And I think the thing is, you know, it's like we did so many concerts and events together. For me as a songwriter, I do kind of look back and I wonder, when did I have time to write? Like, we were so busy.
I don't know either, bro. That was always a mystery to me. I feel like we'd get off the road off a long trip, and then you would like fly to Nashville, or you know, you would drive up and go back to work. But a lot of times, you know, after a while, the guys came to you. Right?
Yeah, we didn't have Zoom rights back then. You know, didn't. You know, now it's like an artist comes off the road, and so if they don't want to leave home and they're wanting to be with their family, they just kind of say, hey, you know what, let's Zoom write together and we'll write for 6 hours and then I'm back with my family. No, I literally, for me, it was hop in the car or jump on a plane and you know, get to Nashville and write with Dave Clark and Don Cook and, you know, they're along the way, Billy Simon and Tony Wood and Brian White, we wrote some together.
Yeah.
The list kind of goes on, but the thing is, I know for me, the one thing that I did lean heavily into as a writer was I leaned into the relationships that I knew that would yield results that we needed.
Yeah.
So it's probably just because of the lack of time, I probably went back to the well that I knew would produce the right stuff.
Yeah.
And that was a lot of Don. It was a lot of Dave.
Mm-hmm. Well, and eventually you were writing for voices too. You weren't just writing to write a song. You were writing something for Kirk. You were writing something for me. You're writing something for yourself.
And Marty.
Right.
Yeah,
and
Marty, yeah.
And you were, I love that you said that you're writing for a purpose, not just going to satisfy a number of cuts. I mean, I know you had a publishing deal and you had to turn in so many cuts a year. But, you know, you were with Benson most of the time, correct?
Yeah. 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 I was with them for 25 years as a writer.
Wow.
Long publishing agreement. And it wasn't, I mean, I renewed it and we had a great relationship, but essentially, you know, they didn't really want me. I mean, there were artists that would ask me if I would consider writing with them, and I now kind of look back and I know why I never really had time to pursue that. It's because we were so busy as an artist. I just didn't have the space. I mean, every now and then I'd have a song that would go to a different artist. But for the most part, it was like, no, that time focused on writing was specifically targeted for him. And honestly, you're right. I mean, you know, when I wrote for Future Generations, I wrote that with your voice on the song. Like in my mind, I was like, this is Andy singing. There's some songs that didn't end up, like I have a pretty good memory with that. Like He Never Changes wasn't me. I wrote that for your voice.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And then we got into the studio and it seems like because of the balance of songs, it's like you ended up recording Puzzles.
Yeah, I ended up recording all Billy Simon songs, I think.
Yeah, well, yeah, on that Face the Nation album.
Yeah, I recorded three Billy Simon songs.
Yeah, Marty was going to do Puzzles, but then Marty got shifted to another song. And then Don and I were talking about Puzzles, and maybe you too. And it was like, and you said, well, I could do that. And then I said, well, I'll just do He Never Changes. Because really, He Never Changes. Here's the thing. Before that moment on the second project, first album, I was just trying to turn in a few songs. Mm-hmm. Second album is when it really kind of, I got engaged in writing a lot because I knew we needed songs. And so as I started writing songs for that project, there were usually voices attached to specific songs.
Yeah. Well, and I, because of the success of Where There Is Faith, I became the Billy Simon singer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And well, so his, and because of the timbre of your voice too, I think when Billy would turn in a song, Billy and you don't sound alike to me, but it's just that I could always hear you singing that song.
Yeah, and I think I connected pretty quickly with his style of, like, his melodies.
Yeah.
They meant, like, it made sense to me. So, yeah. On the second record I did the lead on Man You'd Write About, Puzzles, and Chisel Meets a Stone, which were all Billy Simon written tunes.
Yeah.
And I remember thinking, man, at some point I'd love to sing a song that is like a Don Cook, Mark Harris, Dave Clark, right? Because I hadn't done that yet. And those were, and even though I loved singing those three songs, man, Why and He Never Changes were, it felt like that's where our sound is going. Like that's where.
Yeah. It was interesting. You're right. Because first album could have seen us becoming a song that an artist that sang the songs of Simon, like you see, Truth sings a song of Bill Gaither.
Yeah.
Billy is such a great writer, and Where There's Faith being our breakthrough hit. And then, I mean, on the second album, A Man You'd Write About, I mean, what a song.
Yeah.
Like, and then, you know, he continued on. And but the thing is, I think what happened is I was growing as a writer in my craft. And so I had a very, like, it should be an obvious advantage. I was touring with us, seeing what God was doing, and then thinking, what is the message that we need to be singing? What fits our ministry best?
Right. Well, because we had a life together. The four of us were going through things. And, you know, I even think about, you know, I think about when you wrote Why. That was for Matt, right? It was about Matt.
Well,
and Matt passing, is that true?
Well, it was several things. Like,
oh, it was Dave. So Dave was a big part of it.
Well, but Matt too. So that conversation for that song happened in Louisville, Kentucky, Lexington. It was Kentucky. It was either city, because Nashville, they came with us, and we were coming right back through, and it was just a conversation that started that turned into the finishing of a song. Because when we got to the hotel, we all just kind of descended, Dave, Don, and I descended in a room, and we just like, okay, what does this song need to be? And I remember us finishing that song, and it was several parts. Why was Matt, and why was Dave? Matt had leukemia, and Dave was struggling with an esophageal disease that was terminal. Yeah. And fortunately, he was healed, but... Anyway, the question was, why, you know, why do we have to deal with that? Why? Because God's great enough. He could just completely say, all sickness is gone. And then, and also the question was, why does it happen to people that love him and that are good people? You know, and because it's the thing, you know, when you read the Old Testament, you definitely can look and see he sent plagues on people that were disobedient. But what do we say about the guy that is obedient, that's a youth pastor serving and has given his life to ministry, and yet he has to battle leukemia at a young age? And then why for a Dave Clark? You know, because Dave is a guy that's committed himself to write songs for the church. And I would watch Dave drink this liquid, and he obviously said, do you want to taste it? I was like, there's no way, because he said it's awful. But it would deaden his esophagus. So that for a short amount of time, so that he could put food into his body, so that he could live. But the prognosis was the esophagus ultimately would deteriorate. But the Lord healed it. But anyway, that song came out of that.
Yeah. And, you know, it's interesting. I had this conversation with Billy Sprague, and we talked about that common theme of the songs in Christian music in the 90s, especially was life is hard, but God is good.
Yeah.
And I feel like that what you, Dave, and Don did so well was address that topic. It was, you know, it was, man, there's a lot of bad stuff happening around us. There's a lot of things we can't understand. And isn't that the biggest knock on Christianity, when people who don't believe in in the God that we serve. They say, well, how can a loving God allow bad things, all these terrible things to happen? And so that's the, I think that is the bridge we always have to cross as believers, is to go, God, where are you? And why are you allowing this to happen? But then continuing to keep our faith and our trust that he is real and that it loves us, and you know, that he has an answer for all of these things. But I think that, to me, when I look at why, and I'm looking at all these songs on my wall, when I look at why, I feel like that was a turning point for, in my opinion, for him to do something that was written from within the group.
Yeah.
With personal experience more than anything else we'd done on the first record.
Yeah.
But also embodied what Christian music was about at the time, was asking some hard questions. It wasn't worship, you know, it wasn't a vertical thing. It was, man, it was actually giving voice to what the listener probably was asking in their heart. And I felt like you, especially you and the guys you wrote with, were able to capture that so well. And I feel like there was a big tidal wave of music like that that followed. I think about Scott Crepane's, you know, sometimes he calms a storm.
Yeah.
Sometimes he calms his child, you know, there were so many great songs like that, that I feel like started in the early 90s with you guys, and kind of had that pattern. It's kind of what, you know, what I think For Him's music still brings, you know, great peace to people and is still relevant today, because, you know, my goodness, if we thought 30 years ago the world was in terrible shape, I mean, it's even worse now, and these songs just continue to be like, yep, that's still real today.
Yeah. Oh, when I think about the songs, number one, the thing, like, let me go back just for a minute. Why was probably the song that we all could relate to, but it was more from a personal perspective. But one of the things that I realized post For Him, because when I recorded solo songs, the thing that I could do is I could write the song completely from my perspective. When I was writing For Him, I tried to write from our perspective.
Yeah.
It's a different way of thinking. So, so I think so often, because there's a lot of you guys in those songs, because I would ask questions to you guys. It's like we would talk, because I remember we would meet with A&R several times for some of the projects as we were getting deeper into our career.
Yeah.
And we would sit and talk about, what do we want to say? What's important to us?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Usually out of those conversations, two or three nuggets would come. There wouldn't be song hooks, but it would just be like, it would be a generalized thing that would kind of go, oh, okay. Because the thing is I was still, even though I was an artist a part of the artist before him, I wasn't the entirety of the artist. So I was still pitching songs to the group, you know, and of course you guys were so kind, because you would, like when we walked in, the one thing that I note that we tried to do is we tried to erase who was the writer and listen to the song.
Yeah.
And make the choice.
Right. Right.
And honestly, you know, I mean, the thing is, we really, that those songs represent the way we felt, not I. I'm the lyric guy, it was us.
And it wasn't, let me jump in here too, because it wasn't just the lyric, because the great thing that we had before we started For Him, and we've talked about this a ton on this podcast, was that we did 1,000 shows together in truth before we ever did For Him. So we knew how to create a sound together. And so when you guys would write a melody or a chord progression, or we would hear where the melody was going in the song, we could tell, the vocals on this is going to be a great vocal song. There were other songs where like, I'm not sure what we're going to do with this vocally. And we were a vocal group. So we were always listening and had this intuition about, oh man, think about where the vocals can go here. Think about how our voices are going to blend here, you know. And that was another selling point, I think, because of, you say erase the names from the, you know, erase the songwriter names from the songs. I mean, yeah, but you were going to be in the lead just because you guys were writing for our voices. You were writing for our harmonies. There was where other people weren't, you know, they tried, but they didn't know us like you knew us.
No, I agree with that. I think that that is a very valid point. Like the one thing that the advantage that I had was I'm a singer in it. I know where our parts are landing.
Yeah.
And I know what kind of chorus we need to make that really kind of hit the target of where our voices would go. Like, and, you know, I also would say this, that it's interesting. For him as an artist, melodically, is a lot like modern worship. And it's because we a basics of life or for future generations, or a center of the mark, or a walk on, they don't have worship lyrics. Now, You Reign does, Who You Are does, but what I'm saying is, but the choruses are repetitive and memorable. And part of the reason that they needed to be that was so that we could put our harmonies on it. So there were things that needed to kind of be a little bit more like they lifted like a worship chorus would. I mean, there are so many things about that when you read about what a worship song needs to be.
Yeah.
I look at that list and I'm like, yeah, it's kind of what our For Him songs, our anthems, they needed to be that.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. What was your first cut outside of For Him? Was that early on or was that later
on? Yeah. I'm trying to think. Okay. So,
cause you were writing a ton and we didn't choose every song that you wrote for the record.
So outside of For Him, there were several for Benson. I'm trying to think of the artist that they went to because I wrote it with Don and we didn't land it. So then they pitched it. One or two of the Benson artists then, and then I do know Keith Dudley, when he did his project with Benson, had some on that, Point of Grace. And then Strangeway started getting a lot of different cuts.
Right. What did you write for Point of Grace?
Candle in the Rain. It was a me and Tony Wood song.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
And then not many, like, not much of what I ever did. I'm trying to think of the, is it a Brian Becker? Was there a Brian?
Yeah,
there was a song that Don and I wrote that was real early on, and we didn't choose it. I don't even know if we wrote it even thinking For Him.
Yeah.
It's just that Don asked me to jump in on it. But like I said, I didn't have time. Like,
when guys would 200 plus shows a year.
Yeah. I mean, it was like, because there would be so many times when, I'd get a call from someone that would be like, hey, you want to jump in on this ride with us? And I'm like, I'm in the middle of 50 consecutive nights of singing. It's like, there was no bandwidth.
Did you ever daydream about going, you know, I could kick this whole touring thing to the curb and just go to Nashville and be a full-time songwriter? Is that something you ever really thought about?
No, because For Him was such a part of who I was and what I loved. You know, I mean, I love traveling with you guys and I love what we got to do. So it's like, it's kind of like what comes first, the chicken or the egg. You know, it's like For Him was the catalyst for me to grow as a writer. And I never saw,
You couldn't separate the two.
I couldn't separate the two. Yeah.
So was there ever a song where you were like, dadgummit, guys, this is a great song and we can't get it voted on an album? Was there ever one of those songs where you were like, you're making a mistake. Mm-hmm. This is a great song.
You know, there was one song, and it's a song that it's really interesting because it's the song that Dave Clark and I talk about all the time. And it's because it was one of the last songs that Dave, Don, and I wrote together. Mm. And it's called The Crossing. And
oh, yeah, I've heard you talk about this song.
A time to weep, a time to laugh, a time to mourn, a time to dance.
Yeah.
A time to reap, a time to sow. But it's just, and it was like, when we wrote the song, it was in the latter stages of 4Hymns' recording career. And we, it's the, so the same, Love Has the Final Word, mm-hmm. came from the same few days of writing with Don and Dave and I.
Oh, wow.
And at The Crossing was the song that we all kind of walked out of the room and said, that might be, it felt like it captured some of the, that energy that for future generations, for Center of the Mark, for Basics of Life, the message, all of that captured, you know, yeah. like it felt like that kind of song. Then I remember, it just didn't connect. And I get why. At the same time, it was just one of those special Don Cook like moments where he just tapped into his genius, where melodically it was like, oh man.
Yeah.
And the way that always looked in a co-write with Dave and Don and I, and this is something that I kind of feel is, I was the middleman in that equation. When we were in the room, I was kind of the guy that was like, I would contribute lyric and melody.
Uh-huh.
And Dave would be lyric and Don would be music and melody. But it's kind of like there's something that was just real, just good about the fact that we all three brought our strengths in.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, because Don didn't consider himself a lyric guy, but Don was a great opinion guy on a lyric.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you know.
Don was never short on opinion.
No. And the thing is, it's like he just would say, no, that's not it. And but that song, we just all were like, oh, wow. And it was one of those things where I was like, man, I am bringing gold into the room.
And why didn't we choose it? Do you remember why we didn't choose it?
I just think we had graduated to a different place as far as our ears. I think we just were like,
I'm looking at the Visible album now, which was not our biggest record. I mean, Feel the Earth, You Reign. I mean, those were really the Promise. Great song. Those were the biggest hits on that record. Everything else, you know, I love The Final Word because I love what Omar did with it. And I love my vocal on that. Just personally, I think it's some of the best work I've ever done. But you look back now and just go, this album probably needed The Crossing in hindsight.
I think it did. I think here's the thing. Visible was a good song,
mm-hmm.
but it just didn't land in concert. Like there are songs, like I remember the first time, you know, I sang Visible in concert. I was like, I love the idea of we need to make the invisible God visible.
Yeah.
People see him through us. And I personally just love that song. And, but probably, you know, The Crossing could have, because we were balancing out albums. So The Crossing probably was pushed out by Visible because they both occupy some of the same space musically.
Mm-hmm.
You Reign is on that album?
Yeah.
Yeah. And I would say arguably that was the biggest hit from that project just because that song, I still love that song.
I do too. And it was fun. And Pete Kipley was on that. Produced that, and that was the first time we'd worked with him, and so that was probably part of it as well, where the producers we were working with were going to have a say in what songs were on the album because they were the ones who are going to have to, you know, build them from the ground up.
For all I know, Pete or one of the other producers may have been the one that said, "I'd rather do Visible than After Crossing."
Right.
But at that point, I think even for us, You know, I think the thing is, and you know, we never want to kind of give people too much of an inside look at For Him, unless Marty and Kirk were able to be on the podcast and talk about it. But
right.
At that point, like, I look back and what I would attribute some of the internal things that were going on to was just, we were tired. Mm-hmm. We were just tired. I mean, yeah. Like, we were, you know, it's like, I heard Jackie, your wife, say this the other day. I used to be a people person until people messed it up. I have laughed at that because I think for us, it was like, you know, when you get tired, then you, it's hard to really be the best version of you towards other people.
It is, yeah.
And so my thought is, man, hey, you know, whatever we chose in those last few albums, I think there's a little bit of grace that I give to me or us, because I'm like, we were kind of at a point where we were seeing that maybe this needs a break.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I remember too, and you and I talked about this, and we kind of butted heads on a little bit. I felt like even those last couple of albums we did, I feel like we're hitting kind of the same notes over and over again. Like, it's not, you know, and to me, that was like, I felt like we were running out of creative things and we weren't going to be able to change much just because of our voices and who we were. It was going to take a lot of work to try and push us in a different direction. And I don't think any of us really wanted to, you know, have a rebirth of who we were and try to do something different, because we knew historically from groups that try to do that, it doesn't usually work.
No,
it doesn't.
Well, and the thing, you know, it's like the one thing that I've continued to say, and sometimes I'm like, I don't know that we ever said that we were going to not travel. If one of us left, we were going to disband.
Yeah.
But it was an internal vow for me, because I was like, I don't want to do this.
I kind of think we did. I do think we talked about that, you know, openly, because I do have a memory of that, because I remember saying, when I was saying, hey, I think I'm done here, but feel free to replace me. And then we all kind of laughed and went, well, no, I mean, if one leaves, we're done. You know, it's just, we don't want to try and keep, you know, try to keep it going by replacing members all the time. And we weren't going to be the Imperials in that way. And while I have great love for them, and they, you know, and they had some great lineups through the years, you know, we weren't going to do that. And I don't think any of us had the, you know, had the desire to try and integrate new people into who we were.
Well, I think the thing is, and, you know, I look back now and I'm like, you know, it's been 16 years since we officially, 16, 17 years since we came off the road, 17, actually, almost 18.
18, yeah.
And 18, wow.
18 years.
And so the thing is, we've been off of the road longer than we were on the road now.
Hmm.
So,
well, that blows my mind.
Yeah, so the thing is, we've had 18 years of life without being a touring version of For Him. We're still For Him. It's funny because I always say to people, we're still together.
Yeah.
We just don't tour nor do we record.
Yeah. Oh, I will say sometimes I used to be in a band called I still am. Yeah. I'm still in a group called For Him. We just don't do as much as we used to.
Yeah. And that's that's kind of the way that, because for the first few years I was like, yeah, we're no longer For Him. And I'm like, no, we're still For Him. We sing one time each year together in Florida for an event that we've done for a long time. The way that I see it, I think though, when you start talking about those latter albums, like, I'm going to go back to that because I like that. I think we were running out of energy.
Yeah.
And I think the thing is, it's not that every one of the albums that we released have really good moments on them.
Yeah.
And so, but the thing is I think we kind of got to the point where we had been a part of, when you look at the first five albums, I mean, that's a whirlwind in a short amount of time.
Yeah.
Like, nobody records at that pace.
And no, we were, but you know what? But that was the truth thing. Truth recorded a record every 9 months. And yep. So how many records did you did more than I did? You maybe did one more album in Truth than I did, because I get in the group maybe about 6 months after you did. And yeah. But we did three regular albums along with a Christmas album. So in
it's crazy.
In you know, 3.5-4 years, you were a part of 5 albums. I was a part of 4. And yep. So that was what we did, right? It's just continue to add music because you're doing so many shows. You know, it's tour, 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 make a record, tour, 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 make a record. And we made a record 18 months or so.
It was crazy. It's crazy. And the thing that you think is like, what in the world, like, how do you like, cause now that I look back on it, I'm like, we were touring continually.
Yeah.
So, but it's a miracle that, yeah.
Well, I was going to say we were Benson's bell cow for so long. And if people understand yeah. sales cycles, you know, you need to have your bell cow release. If you don't have a lot of other artists that are selling a ton, which they had great artists on their label, but for him was it's for a long period of time, their top artist as far as sales and singles. And so it's like, yeah, we got to have another For Him record out in this sales cycle. And so they would yeah. count on us to continue to put out product.
Oh yeah.
Every, you know, literally every 18 months.
Oh, you know what? From our side, we didn't realize that.
Yeah.
We just, you know,
this is our life. Yeah. It's just our life.
Yeah. Now in the role that I serve, you know, at Gateway, where I'm kind of label operations, I'm still a worship pastor, but I help make sure that our songs get delivered, into Capitol's distribution chain, and that we have enough activity going on. You know, we have to think through that so that people are continually drawn back to the brand. Mm-hmm. Knowing that that's really not our biggest goal. The biggest goal at Gateway and what we do in Gateway Worship is to just resource the kingdom of God with great song. You know, if the best songs we can write. But yeah. it's funny, in that business mindset of what we're looking at, it's like, I'm so grateful we have the missional side, because the business mind side is always like, hey, we need to keep like that algorithm right there. You know, the data is yeah. showing us that. And I'm looking back going, yeah, when For Him was touring, there was some business minded guy that was guiding that conversation. It was saying, hey, it's time for another For Him album.
Yeah.
And we're like, well, didn't we just record and release an album? Because I remember, like, think about it. Like, this is so funny. Like, there were For Him albums. Basics of Life had 5 to 6 singles
mm-hmm.
that were, and 5 of those were number ones.
Yeah.
Like what I'm saying is, and so then The Message came out, or The Ride, and it had a bunch too. And it was like, but I was like, but there was never a break from us releasing a single, because while that last single was kind of fading from mm-hmm. the previous album, that new one was coming right out.
That's right.
And it was like, there was never a break to let it reset, to let the market reset. Mm-hmm. And probably there's, if we sat down and really processed through it, we burned so much on the front end just because of momentum.
Yeah.
That, it might be tough to even consider, even if we had the best songs we would ever have recorded on the backside of it. It just might have been hard to get momentum behind those, just simply yeah. because, you know, I've heard, you know, some of my friends in radio saying, you know, after you have 20 songs of one artist in your song bank, it's hard to put the 21st in there.
Yeah, I agree with that.
And yeah. I'm like, I get it.
And especially if it's not super different. And, you know, so I think, so you mentioned those first set of records. So our self-titled solo, which was just the best collections of songs we could find from whoever was writing them. And we were just trying to get a record made. But thankfully, you go back and listen to that record. I think you and I talked about this the other day. I don't, you know, in the past several years, I haven't given a lot of credit to that first record because right. of that, because it was just a collection yeah. of songs. It wasn't.
Yeah.
Songs you had written, we didn't know yeah. what we were doing yet, But I go back and listen to that first record. I'm like, it's a real record. Like, this sounds like a real record. There's some really good moments on here. And some moments where I go, oh, yeah, we would have never done that to a record three. But there were some, you know.
I agree.
I had Andy Ivey on the podcast, and we kind of talked about putting that first record together and how he was really instrumental in helping find a lot of those songs and setting up the producers and stuff. We couldn't have done that without him. But then you get into Face the Nation, Basics of Life, the Christmas album, The Ride, The Message. I mean, that was a great stretch.
Yes.
And then, you know, we started to end our time with Benson, and Obvious was a good record, had some really good songs on it. Don't sleep on that album, because there's some big hits on that record. And then the Hymns record, right on the heels of that, is still our biggest, has the biggest streaming numbers of anything we've ever done. It's has the most staying power. But then we went to Word after our contract with Benson was finally done. And I am obsessed with this album right now. And you and I have talked about this over the last few months. I think the Walk On album was, if everything had gone, if we could have sustained, because there were problems at Word at the time, you know, the industry was changing rapidly, because this album came out in 2001. Do you remember?
Yeah.
You remember what happened?
Oh, September 11th, we were there.
I'm going to leave you hanging right there so that you come back next week for part two of my conversation with my friend Mark Harris. Until then, head to my website, andychrisman.com. There you can check out my radio show. It's called Worship with Andy Chrisman, heard on 500 stations around the world each and every week. You can also find me on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. Also, I've got a YouTube channel, so a lot of these conversations I'm having on the podcast, I've got video to go along with it. You want to check that out? Just search Andy Chrisman for him on YouTube. Subscribe to my channel so you don't miss anything that's going on here on the One Degree of Andy podcast. We'll see you next week.